Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforming higher education. This message was paid for by EY.
This is The Guardian.
Hello, lovely people of podcasts, and welcome to the show. You're with Catherine Murphy. I am the political editor of Guardian Australia, and with me in the studio is my absolutely delightful friend and colleague, Amy. Amy Remakers.
Again, that is quite subjective.
Thoroughly objective. Okay, so why is Amy with me? Well, I was very conscious that this new episode would hit your feeds on Saturday morning, which is obviously referendum day. I was conscious that for people who haven't already voted, they would be making their way to cast their ballots in the Voice referendum. And I was thinking, well, what sort of content might be helpful as people are going forward and trying to make their choice. So earlier in the week, Amy put together a terrific, really terrific comprehensive fact check of the seven biggest pieces of misinformation that have been pushed by the no side during the course of the referendum debate. As I said a minute ago, I'm sharing this because I think it's a really helpful resource for people who have not had the bandwidth to engage with the detail about this at all. And I know there'll be heaps of you, even regular listeners of this show. I know there will be loads of you who just haven't had the time or the energy or the space to try and sift and sort the different things you've been hearing about the referendum campaign over several weeks. So, but rather than me set this up, Amy, why don't you set this up?
Well, it's everything you've just said, because I think the campaign has been unrelenting and having such a barrage of information come at you when you've got a life to live, when you've got your own problems, when, you know, who knows what is going on in your own households. I think a lot of people do switch off from that information. But I also think that we live in a brave new world where people aren't necessarily getting their news from mainstream media organizations. They're getting it from social media. They're getting it from TikTok, from Facebook, from, you know, the site formerly known as Twitter. They're getting it from Instagram. And the people putting the information on those sites may have their own agenda as to why they're putting out some of these claims, or they may truly have heard something and have been spooked by it and think that they need other people to know about this thing that they have just learned. Because I think humans, you know, we pretty much, we see something often enough and we go, well, it must be true. And I think that we need to accept in the mainstream media that we are not the voice of God and people are not necessarily getting their information from us anymore. And so I was getting a lot of questions through email and through my own social media of people saying, I've heard this. Is it true? And it was really the same seven variations of the same seven themes coming to me over and over again. And a lot of it was being pushed by the No campaign, or at least, you know, shared by some of the conservative politicians as being, oh, you need to be afraid of this. And it was growing into these, you know, outrageous claims that can seem outrageous to me, but that is because I have all of the information. I live and breathe this stuff. And I go, oh, no, that's not how the High Court works. Well, not everyone knows how the High Court works. Mm-hmm. Not everyone knows what the UN actually is and what its powers can be. And so I thought, you know, the one thing that I can do here as a critically trained journalist, allegedly, is to take what is true and take what is false and sort that out for people.
Yes, which you do very eloquently over the next sort of 25 minutes or so. So, you know, perfect landing point. So have a listen on your way to the polling booth this morning, or as you're having your coffee, or as you're out trying to clear your head and have a wander. Take the time. It's an important vote today, and we want you to have the best available information. So thank you so much to our friends at Full Story, our Guardian Australia sister podcast. The Full Story guys produced this episode, and Amy was interviewed by Jane Lee.
So, Amy, this is the first referendum we've had in Australia with social media out in full force. How has that affected this campaign?
Oh, it's affected the campaign just so much in ways that I don't think we truly have a handle on, because social media is talking to people that we're not. By and large, a lot of it has just been, you know, people's feelings about the referendum or just straight out misinformation that is just being spread like wildfire across the social media sites. And I just don't think the Yes campaign was prepared for how much misinformation was out there. No matter which way you're voting, you should be voting on the facts, and they have been pretty hard to come by this referendum.
So let's try and cut through some of that misinformation. What are some of the most troubling and damaging pieces that you've seen throughout this campaign?
One of the biggest conspiracies that I have heard is that The Voice is going to be able to essentially disrupt parliamentary proceedings so much, and this is a conspiracy that is not based in any single fact at all, but the idea around this particular conspiracy theory is that the government won't be able to pass any legislation, so the conspiracy goes, and then the crossbencher that The Voice has chosen, according again to the conspiracy, will be able to go to the Governor General in some made-up way, in some process that does not exist, and say, make me Prime Minister and I will be able to make the Parliament work. That is impossible. It is impossible under Australian law. It is not based in any single piece of reality. There is no way under Australia's constitution, under any sort of subclause, under any sort of implied clause that this could ever happen. The Prime Minister is the person in charge of the political party that has the most seats in the House of Representatives. There is no way one independent crossbencher could ever wrangle enough support to make them Prime Minister. It cannot happen.
Throughout the campaign, Full Story has run a podcast called The Voice AMA podcast, where we take listeners' questions about The Voice and we put them to people on the yes and the no sides. Our team on that podcast have selected the top five most damaging and pervasive pieces of misinformation about this referendum. Let's talk through some of those, Amy. The first one is that The Voice will lead to a quote-unquote land grab for Indigenous Australians.
This is an old furphy. This is one that goes back decades about anything that comes with native title, anything that comes with Indigenous rights, anything that comes with equity. We're not even talking equality here. You have this fear.
Let me just show your viewers that this shows 78% of the land mass of Australia coloured brown on this map.
If you go back like a couple of decades, you can even find former Prime Minister John Howard, before he was Prime Minister, he went on television around the time that they were making the Mabo decision, and he held up a map of Australia and he said, this is how much of Australia is under threat if this decision goes through the courts.
Now, the Labor Party and the Democrats are effectively saying that the Aboriginal people of Australia should have the potential right of veto over further development of 78% of the land mass of Australia.
Like, that is not how native title works. That is not how the law works. That is not how any of the decisions around Mabo were going to work. And the idea that The Voice is going to, you know, be able to give Indigenous people the power to come into your backyard or to claim ownership over a piece of property, again, is just a furphy. We have heard this so many times and it has never actually eventuated. And so you have to ask people, why do you still believe that this is something that could happen? Is there an element of guilt here where you think, oh, hey, this is kind of how we took the nation in the first place? Or is it the fact that that this is the most scary thing that you could imagine happening, that you just think this is so terrifying that this is absolutely going to happen, despite all the evidence that there has never been a single property, a homeowner, who has had their home taken over by an Indigenous person because of Indigenous native title or even anything that The Voice is proposing. Like, people still have that fear, and that's been at the heart of all of these misinformation campaigns.
Another piece of misinformation that you hear a lot is that The Voice will increase taxes.
It is impossible for The Voice to increase taxes because The Voice has no power to set laws. It has no power to set taxes. It has no power to tell the government or the parliament what it has to happen. It has no veto. When you look at how our parliament is set up, not even the Senate can increase taxes. That's just the way that the Constitution's built, baby. So the only way that you can get a money bill through the parliament is if the House of Representatives agrees to it. And that's the government. So the House of Representatives is ruled by the party that has the most number of seats in it. That's your government. Sometimes there is a minority government. So that is the party with the biggest number of seats, plus some crossbenchers who have agreed to give supply and vote with the government on issues like money. And so every single time the Senate goes, hey, we should raise the rate, we should look at doing this thing that's going to cost some money, we should maybe tax the rich. Every single time that happens, if the Senate passes it, it has to go back to the House of Representatives, and the House of Representatives goes, this was not our idea. No, we don't like it. And that bill is gone. The Voice doesn't even have the power to put a bill into Parliament to have taxes increased in the first place. So this is not something that could ever happen under Australian law.
Well, let's move to number three. What would you say to someone who says that A Voice would divide Australia by race by inserting race into the Constitution?
I would say maybe go back and have a look at some history books, because the Constitution was pretty much built on race. It was pretty much part and parcel when that document was created in 1901. And in fact, we've had to amend it to make it not as explicitly about race in a negative sense. Section 51 of the Constitution and Section 25 of the Constitution already include racial elements to it. It's already built into the document. The Voice is not about race. The Voice is not about putting race into the Constitution. The Voice is about acknowledging Indigenous people, giving constitutional recognition to Indigenous people, because that's something that the Founding Fathers, you know, neglected on purpose to do in 1901. And it's also saying this advisory body cannot be scrapped by future governments. That's all it's doing. We have scrapped every single other advisory body. And so now we're saying, put it in the Constitution so you can't scrap it. It doesn't give any specific powers to Indigenous people. It doesn't raise Indigenous people above other people within Australia. It doesn't make them the supreme beings of Australia. That's not what it's about. Putting the advisory body into the Constitution is just a way of Indigenous people saying to government, we always want to be heard on these things. You will not have the power to scrap our advisory body, but you can build the advisory body any way that you want to. So future governments will always have to listen to A Voice, but it doesn't have to take the advice of The Voice. I mean, future governments could decide, if this thing gets through the referendum, they could decide to reduce the number of people in The Voice to just one. They can do anything that they want to, as long as they have the parliament's approval to The Voice. Having it in the Constitution, though, is just a way of making sure that the structure, The Voice, always exists. That's it.
Next, what you're actually voting for on Saturday. On social media, you also see a lot of people saying that the campaign for The Voice is just a communist ploy. What do you make of that one, Amy?
Well, I mean, if The Voice is a communist ploy, then big business suddenly is probably going to find themselves labelled communists because they get to advise on policy regarding their business practices all the time. They're currently advising government on the IR policy that the government wants to put through. We have like big forums and summits that include all of the big business leaders where essentially they get to sit down and tell government what they think should happen in relation to jobs and treasury policies. I'm not sure if they're considered communist. Every piece of legislation that goes through the parliament has to have a look at whether or not it's going to impact on regional communities negatively. And I'm not sure the Nationals would ever consider themselves to be communist just because they like to have advice on the regional impact of bills through the parliament. I mean, this idea that advising on a policy is suddenly going to turn Australia into some sort of communist state, again, is just frankly ridiculous because we advise on legislation and bills every single day on this place. The only difference with The Voice is they're saying that, hey, if it's in the Constitution, you always have to get the advice from us. That's it. By having it in the Constitution, it always has to exist. So people always have a place where they can give consultation, they can give feedback, they can give advice. And again, it is up to the Parliament to decide how much of that advice they take on board, just as they do with every single other advisory body or person who submits advice to the government on policy for every other range of policies and legislation that we have.
Hmm. Earlier this year, volunteers on the No campaign were given scripts by Fair Australia that were revealed to include misinformation about The Voice, including that it, quote, undermines our one-vote democracy. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, another furphy that has pretty much existed from the time that the Uluru Statement from the Heart was put forward. I mean, we had coalition MPs at the time saying that this would be a third chamber of parliament, which was never true. We had that sort of, you know, take off and spread, and that has now led to this entire thing that it's going to give Indigenous people more votes in the parliament, more representation than other people and, you know, everything else, which again, it is not true. I mean, you can look at some people on the coalition side, like Julian Lisa, who is a constitutional conservative. He's not somebody who, you know, you'd ever say would be a rebel when it came to the constitution. He's voting yes because he's like, it's constitutionally sound. There's no problems with it from a constitutional point of view. In fact, he thinks it's liberal values to have an advisory body like this because he thinks that people should be in charge of their own destiny, that they should have some say in things that happen to them, which is what the parliament is about. The parliament makes laws for all Australians, including Indigenous people, but those laws don't always land as they should because we don't have all of the experience that we need in the parliament to absolutely say how this policy may work. So even if you go on the side of, well, politicians are making policy that's well-meaning for Indigenous people, it doesn't mean that it's actually going to work in practice, which is what The Voice is about, is trying to make sure that those laws, those policies work in practice from go. But what we have seen during this referendum campaign and all of these mistruths and misleading claims that are being put forward, and some of them are straight up lies, all of that seems to be hinting that we are well down the road towards this more American style of politics than perhaps we thought we were, because a lot of what we're hearing in the Voice referendum campaign, a lot of it has started in America when it comes to, oh, you can't trust the voting system, you're, you know, elevating one group upon another. This is a way that, you know, you're going to have communists start to infiltrate your government. This is a way that you're going to have elites stamp down on you. All of that has come from this really binary, divisive American Trumpian style of politics. And we're just seeing the fringes of that picked up, placed in Australia and applied to the Voice campaign.
So, Amy, we've talked a lot about what The Voice isn't today. Can you help us recap what it actually is for people who are voting this Saturday?
The truth about The Voice is that it is an advisory body to the parliament that is controlled by the parliament. That's it. Your representatives will be able to make amendments to The Voice. The question you're being asked is whether or not it should sit in the Constitution as an idea that The Voice always has to exist. That's the truth of this referendum. So the question is a proposed law to alter the Constitution to recognise the First Peoples of Australia by establishing an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voice. Do you approve this proposed alteration? And you write yes or no. That's it. That is your job. Because the question is not about what The Voice is going to look like. The question is not about the details of The Voice. And a lot of people have raised that too, just saying, you know, it's outrageous that you're asking us to vote on something without knowing the detail. To which I would say, in every single election that you've ever voted in, you vote on things without knowing the detail all the time. People put forward policy platforms where they say, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to do this home policy. They don't show you the legislation because they can't, because you don't have the legislation until you're in the parliament and there's been consultation and everyone within the parliament has a look at it and say, hey, this is what the legislation should look on, and then they vote on it. That's the politician's job, to build the legislation. Your job is to tell the politicians whether or not there should be this advisory body in the Constitution. It's not going to change Australia's democracy. It's probably not even going to be something that most of you notice, because parliamentary processes go through different changes every single day and it happens without most people noticing. The voice is going to be exactly the same. It's just if it's in the Constitution, you can't scrap it.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. The EP of the show, of course, is Miles Martignoni. We will be back with you sooner than you think with the wash-up of the results from Referendum Day. Until then, take care.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforminghigher education. This message was paid for by EY.